Hello everybody, welcome and kumusta. Thank you for joining me. This is Hao, your occupational therapist, and welcome to Occupational Therapy Conversations. In this episode of OT Conversations, we will talk about ECG or electrocardiogram. I don't know why it's cardio. Well, I guess it's sometimes they call it EKG or ECG. And let's talk about it. ECG, like I said, electrocardiogram, is a test. It's a measuring device. And what it does is that it records the electrical activity of the heart over a period of time. For as long as you're monitoring it and there are leads in there and it's turned on, then yes, it will monitor the electrical activity of the heart. And it will help us understand how the heart is working. Particularly the rhythm of the heart, the rate, and if there are any abnormalities like arrhythmia, for example, or if there is ischemia, or there are some structural issues. Okay. Remember, EKG will not tell you something about the blood supply, but it will tell you about the electrical activities. Now, why is ECG important? It is important for many reasons. First and foremost, it's a diagnostic tool. For diagnosis, it will detect certain conditions like heart rhythm problems, particularly those conditions such as atrial fibrillation or those who are having ventricular tachycardia. ECG can be used for monitoring because it tracks the effects of medications or the interventions. So for example, you have a medication that slows down the rhythm of the heart or raises it up. So ECG is a good way of monitoring whether the medication is taking effect. It is an emergency tool, and it can identify life-threatening conditions like heart attacks and myocardial infarctions, apart from the symptoms of chest pain, obviously. But this is one of the things that ambulance people will do. For emergencies, they would use it. And ECGs are also used for routine screening, particularly useful for checkups for patients with risk factors like hypertension, those who has diabetes or chest pain, for example. So that's why it's important for those particular reasons. Moving on, how does it work? How does it do it? Remember, guys, the heart is producing electrical impulses. And I've been saying this over and over again, the heart can only have problems in three areas. It can have problems on the structural area, like the valve, or when the muscles have grown bigger than usual, hypertrophy, for example. And you can have vascular problem, meaning the blood supply is not getting there. And another problem is electrical or the nerves. And so remember that the heart produces electrical impulses. And these electrical impulses will trigger contractions. So every time, just like the muscle, just like any other muscles, it starts with an electrical impulse. And these electrical impulses produced by the sinoatrial nerve or sinoatrial node will trigger contractions. And these impulses that the heart is doing is picked up by the electrodes that are placed under the skin. So these are sensors are taped onto different parts of the chest and of the skin. And every time there is an electrical impulse, the electrodes are sensitive enough to pick this up. Yeah? And these ECG machine then will amplify and record them as series of waves on a graph, whether it is on the screen or it is on the paper. So I think in the olden days, it just directly prints it out. But now there's ECG, there's memories into it. But that's what it does. When it comes to the setup of the ECG, the standard is the 12-lead ECG. And you have two major leads. You have the right arm, left arm, right leg, left leg. So limb leads. And then the other one would be chest leads. And that's labeled from V1 to V6. And that's placed across the chest wall. Despite it being called 12 lead, actually, I could be wrong, but there's only 10 electrodes are actually placed, but they record it from 12 different perspectives, okay? That's a good, what's that thing called? Pub quiz information or factoids, yeah? The 12 ECG lead, there's only 10 leads. I don't know if a lot of people know about that, but there are only 10 leads, but it records 12 perspectives. And when you are looking at the ECG leads, there are waves that it will produce. It's too bad that this is a podcast, but just remember that, you know, LMNOP. I don't know, it starts with PQRST. That's it. I don't know why and whoever designed that. Maybe I'll look it up at some point. But P, these are some of the waves, right? P, Q, R, S, T. Those are the parts of it, of these waves. P wave would be the atrial depolarization, meaning the atrium is contracting. Depolarization meaning the atrium, which is the receiving part of the heart, the top part, they are contracting. Then the next thing would be the QRS complex. And this QRS complex represents the ventricular depolarization or the ventricular contraction. So we're done with the P and then QRS. And then the last part would be a T wave. And the T wave is representing the relaxation of the ventricles. So the ventricle would relax. That's a T wave. All right, there we go. So P, the atrium, starts to contract. And then there will be some gap. And then QRS would mean the ventricle is contracting, and then when it relaxes, it gets picked up as well by the EKG. Now, the space between that first P wave all the way to the R, so the PR interval, so that's the middle, that's the peak of the QRS complex. This is the time between the atrium and the ventricular contraction, right? And then at the end of it, the ST segment is important because this will detect ischemia or infarction. There will be normal rates when it comes to the heart. And whether you want to know this by heart, it would be good if you do. But if it's an information that you do not need, then it's unlikely to stay in your head, isn't it? But heart rate is 60 to 100 beats per minute. That's the normal heart rate. When it comes to the PR interval, remember the PR interval? This is the time between the atrium and the ventricular contraction. It's 120 to 200 milliseconds. So very quick. And then the QRS complex, which is the ventricular depolarization, this is the duration of this is less than 120 milliseconds. And then the QT interval would be and should be less than 440 milliseconds. But then this thing varies depending on the heart rate. Okay, let's remember the numbers, important numbers. 60 to 100, that would be the normal heart rate. And then 120 to 200 would be the PR interval. And remember, the PR interval is the ventricular contraction. Yeah, 120 to 200 milliseconds. That's the amount of time that it takes for our ventricles to contract. And then the QRS duration would be the ventricular depolarization, the contraction, is actually less than 120. The less than 120 milliseconds. And then the QT interval would be less than 440 milliseconds. Some of the clinical uses for these ECG would be you'd use it for when somebody's having chest pain. Why do you want to do that? Because it rules out heart attack. When somebody's been having palpitations, you want to identify, like really formally capture that arrhythmia. Is without rhythm, is faulty rhythm. And then when somebody's fainting or is having some syncope, and what you want to do here is you're checking whether there is conduction block. And usually, most of the time, almost always, like 99%, 99.9%, a person would be monitored pre-surgery screening. What would be the limitations for ECG? It only is a snapshot in time. And some arrhythmias are intermittent as well. So if some arrhythmias, if it doesn't capture it, then the tendency is that doctors might say that everything is normal. But then sometimes arrhythmia might happen in the middle of the night and then that didn't get captured. Unless you have the ECG for a whole week, and that happens in there, then that's definitely a point where it will be captured. And when it comes to some of the limitations is that it needs interpretation skill. Because there are some normal variants that can mimic disease as well. So it is a skill. Somebody that will use this, a cardiac physiologist, for example, specialized nurse who's looking into this, and that's all they do. Look at the rhythm, because what they wanted to do is once you identify that there are problems with the heart, then they need to sort it out. And it can be sorted through medication, heart medication, or they can do whatever intervention. So it will be interventional cardiology, which means that it is not surgical intervention. So either a pacemaker will be put in, or there's going to be ablation. There we go. And the use of this should always be combined with the patient history and examination. So really, ECG, it is a quick, it is non-invasive tool, and it monitors and it checks the heart's electrical activity. And by knowing the electrical activities of the heart, you can read the waves, the patterns, and then the clinicians then can detect a wide range of cardiac condition. For occupational therapists like myself, it's not about diagnosing it, but it's about being familiar enough to understand the patient care. You need to understand it in terms of safety, and you can use it in terms of interprofessional collaboration. And just like CPAP, ECG sits under the device management, like personal device management, if a person has a personal ECG. But geez, imagine that. If you're that paranoid about your heart and you have an ECG all the time, at home, I mean, there's nothing stopping you from buying it, nothing stopping a person from buying it. But then it's too annoying, isn't it? Because you can't do much if something's wrong with your heart. So the heart needs to be at the right rate, the right rhythm, and the right pressure. Yeah? There you go. That is a good part of the ECG. What would be the implications of this to us as occupational therapists? Really? I mean, personally and professionally, I'm not scared about it. I know that it is. It's there. It does what it does. But we shouldn't be focusing so much on that, that it becomes the bread and butter. The thing is, every therapist I have noticed in this country, they tend to want to know a lot about the medical situation and the medical cases, and they tend to become doctors in the end. You know, an advanced practice for OT, for physio, involves knowing about these things. So it means that you are approximating the job of a doctor, and that shouldn't be. If you have an advanced practice OT, you should be a super specialist OT when it comes to ADLs, cognitive assessments, ADL retraining, special skills on motor retraining. But this is physiological. This is physiology. Yeah. So what would be the implications for this? There's implications in terms of safety in practice, especially if you are working in an acute cardiac and you're working with acute acute cardiac and acute respiratory patients. Those who's had post-myocardial infarction, those who's had post-CABG, they're all on monitors. COPD, they're probably on monitors as well. Those people who are on transplant in critical care, these are vital monitors, which I believe I have done some form of a podcast in previous episodes. Please check them out. Now, understanding the ECG will allow OTs to recognize when the patient is medically unstable. Normally, these telemetry is, they make alarms. They're very intelligent. If it's beating fast, it will create an alarm. Yeah. And if that happens when you're doing something, you need to pause or you need to modify the therapy if there are abnormal rhythms that's being picked up. So you do your session, say in critical care or in a cardiology unit, and you hear something is beeping, and you're doing first is they are on ECG, for example. They have these monitors. And you get them out of bed, and already, you know, all these alarms are firing out. It's just telling you, warning, warning. You know, you shouldn't do that. Have a check. So you should change. First and foremost, it may become an emergency. So be prepared to call for an emergency. That's when you should know how to escalate these concerns. And it has to be very important. Once it's rapid and you have the alarms, the first thing really is to stop what you're doing. Make sure you're able to call for help because it may be an emergency, right? And if it's just monitoring and you can see that the heart rate is increasing, then but everything else is normal, you need to slow down your therapy. It's good because it's a monitor. It's a feedback. And nowadays, these ECG, it's called telemetry. Tele being television. Metry is a measurement. So it's a measurement that's being presented in on a screen, so telemetry. So ECGs are useful for OT, particularly in safety in practice. It is important for activity tolerance and vital monitoring for occupational therapists. And OTs can do this, and we can use it to grade the activity programs, like when we're doing mobility, when we're doing ADL retraining. It's good because it gives us an immediate feedback in terms of how our activity is demanding things from the heart. And sometimes a person stands up And then you can see that the person starts to get dizzy. Could be the blood pressure. It can explain, you know, a problem with the rhythm. Can explain a reduced endurance or dizziness. And a lot of people, elderly people, are having that concerns because they, you know, they faint, for example. They have dizziness. They have falls. And also, if a patient reports palpitations during functional mobility retraining, OTs should recognize it, and it may be related to an arrhythmia. But at the end of the day, these are all symptoms. It just meant that if you're doing something and you're already palpitating, then the person needs to stop doing what they do. You need to make it safe for the patient. You need to get them to sit down. And if they're still complaining of something, just either call for an emergency, the emergency bell straight away if you're working in an acute hospital. And that's it. Yeah. You can use ECG, particularly because you have a collaborative role in rehab, particularly in cardiac rehabilitation. OTs will focus on lifestyle modification, self-management, occupational balance, for example. ECG monitoring is used during rehabilitation sessions to guide exercise prescription. Yeah. But who will prescribe the exercise? I would expect a physical therapist to be able to do that, but it doesn't appear like physiotherapists can prescribe exercises now unless they specialize on it. And there are even exercise practitioners in NHS. They are probably graded lower than a band 5. They prescribe prescription. OTs need to interpret whether activity that they are providing is within the safe parameters or whether rest period is required. The impact of this as well is that there is an impact, particularly with occupational performance, like arrhythmia, ischemia, heart failure. These conditions that are identified by ECG are causing fatigue, dyspnea, syncope. It will limit a person's ADL activities. It will restrict them to return to work, to driving, to doing their leisure activities. And knowing that there is a heart condition and you cannot push the heart fast enough back to the level where it was, so the remediation activity, if you cannot do that, then you will need to compensate. So you will have an adaptive approach. You will need to modify the activity. Instead of a golf of how many holes, say 12, just go with just lessen it down. Slow down the rate of your walking. Use a buggy. Yeah, that's one in particular. You still maintain the ability. You still enjoy what you do, but you're not putting so much demand. So you are finding ways on how the person can still do things regardless of problems with the heart. And occupational therapists, obviously, we educate patients and people regarding self-management. So OTs can reinforce education about how ECG findings may connect to their day-to-day life. So you teach them, we teach them energy conservation. But then everybody teaches energy conservation, doesn't it? Nurses are doing that. The physios are doing that. Everybody singing the same songs. But know that. Don't lose that skill. Yeah? So energy conservation is a must. And it can explain much more to the patient. Visually, you can explain why pacing, rest, or medication adherence is important because it's a visual cue to the patient and they'll understand it much better. It'll stop them from being more fearful of the condition. And it will help the patients interpret their symptoms as well. And when it comes to critical care, device management, yes, it's important. There's implications for this for OT. once a person stepped down or stepped out of ICU, for example, after surgical interventions with the heart, step down units, OTs are still working with patients who are in telemetry because they're on continuous ECG monitoring. So when this happens, you have to avoid pulling the wires while you're mobilizing. Nothing's going to go wrong with a patient, but it will produce an alarm. It will scare the patient. It will make you panic. And these wires that are connected, sometimes they're still connected to a main console, and that it becomes a hazard for falls. There are some ECGs that are now has a wireless unit that somebody can put in their pocket, so that's good. But there are still some hospitals out there where there are some leads. And know that lead disconnection, know that it will trigger an alarm. And when it does, if you can't put it back on, just call the nurse. But just do know, usually in these ECG leads, they're color-coded as to where it goes. And these leads and wires have color. They're color-coded. So anybody can actually put it back on. So in summary, really, when it comes to occupational therapy and the ECG, ECG literacy means that you will be safer and you will be able to provide a more effective therapy. It will help the occupational therapists, us, to integrate medical stability, activity tolerance, and patient education into rehabilitation. Okay, there you go, guys. I hope you learned a little something today. This is purely ECG. It's a device. It's a tool. Just remember, when it comes to this, a person is less likely to be discharged home unless all of the heart parameters are stable. So if the heart rate is not right, do not push the person to go home. Or if they insist on going home, then fine, just document that the person is going home against clinical advice. And then you'll have to teach them about emergency procedure. Once it happens at home, who should they call? What else? Rhythm, rate, pressure, all of these things needed to be sorted out and addressed before a patient is sent home. There you go. I hope you learned a little something. If you did, if you enjoyed it, have a conversation amongst yourselves. Talk to your friends about this. Talk to your colleagues about ECG. Teach them something. That's the best way to learn. Talk about it over a cup of tea. Learn together. Grow together. Just remember, guys, anything you do matters and has an outcome. Until next time, bye.